This is the State Senate Affairs Committee. Today's date is March 24th, 2011. Time is approximately 9:04 in the morning. Today we have two bills before us. The first is Senate Bill 53, reestablishing a state commission on the status of women. We have quite a large crowd here for that. And the second is House Concurrent Resolution 6, designating April as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Then we move on to the confirmation hearing for Mr. Brian Butcher, who is the Commissioner Designee of the Department of Revenue. We'll begin with Senate Bill 53, sponsored by Senator Davis. And I see we have her staff member, Celeste, here. If you welcome to the committee, if you could put yourself on the record and give us an overview of the bill.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Wolakowski, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Celeste Hodge. I am staff to Senator Betty Davis. The bill before you, Senate Bill 53, reestablishes the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, a 9-member body devoted to improving the status of women. The Alaska Commission on the Status of Women was originally created in 1978, renewed and renamed to the Alaska Women's Commission in 1983, then combined with the Alaska Human Relations Commission in 1993. While the Alaska Human Relations Commission continues to exist in statute, it has never been funded and was declared inactive in 1996. Staggering statistics for women in Alaska show the extreme need to reestablish the commission to exclusively focus on major issues facing women. As you know, Mr. Chairman and committee members, Alaska has the highest rates of sexual assault and domestic violence in the nation, and historically, women are more likely to be poor than men. Poverty rates for unmarried female householders with children are particularly high and have consistently been 2 or 3 times as high as overall male and female poverty rates since 1996. Survey data compiled by the American Community Survey shows that of 26,518 families in Alaska with a female head of household, 22.6% live below the poverty level. The gender gap, wage gap persists in Alaska and across a wide spectrum of occupations and industries. In 2009, according to the Alaska Department of Labor, Alaskan women on average earned only 66.6% of what men earned. And although more women than men in Alaska hold a bachelor's degree or higher, data shows that men's median annual earnings are higher in every education level. Alaskan women, in particular, women of color, experience health care disparities, and women living in rural Alaska have worse than average disparities on access and utilization of services. Reestablishing the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women will help Alaskans focus on these critical areas that have negatively impacted women and children for decades. If we sincerely care about the women and children in this state, we must do more to deal with these staggering statistics. Throughout the commission's existence, the commission conducted many public hearings and trainings, developed manuals on violence against women, education, and welfare, conducted research to help women avail themselves, and provided opportunities and needs, problems, and contributions of women in the areas of education, homemaking, civil and legal rights, and labor and employment. The commission developed a comprehensive statewide plan that identified the needs of children and youth and made recommendations to enhance the quality of life for women and children, as well as produced annual reports which described in detail the accomplishments of the commission in those years. Alaska has an opportunity to once again show we sincerely care about the women in this state by reestablishing the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women. The time is now. We need innovative, forward-thinking, and a commission that exclusively concentrates on ensuring equality for women. Mr. Chairman, that's my introduction of the bill. We do have former legislator and former executive director of Alaska Women's Commission, Katie Hurley, online, and former vice chair of the commission, Joy Green Armstrong, available also online to provide supportive testimony and respond to questions relating to the commission. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Celeste, for that overview. And let me just mention, we have a full committee today. We have Senator Kukesh, Senator Pasvan, Senator Giesel, Senator Meyer, and myself, Wolakowski. And if you could just take a moment, Celeste, and The way the bill is structured, it's got three sections, but if you could just walk us briefly through what is the bulk of the bill, and that's section one. I'll just take a few minutes and explain what is being done here. Or if you have someone you'd like to defer to, we can do that as well.
So in section one, just the act reestablishing the commission on the status of women and relating to the purpose and powers of the Alaska Human Relations Commission. And so what we're attempting to do is just to reestablish that commission. And in the bill, it talks about the makeup of the commission itself and, you know, when the meetings are held, the powers and the duties of the commission, the type of research and the work that the commission would be responsible for, and the reports that the commission would provide.
And is it contemplated that this commission will have staff available to them to help them with research and?
Senator Bulikowski, it is the hope that the staff is provided with this commission, because it's my understanding from looking at the various reports that there's a lot of work involved in the makeup of the commission and the reports and the studies that go along with it. And, you know, to simply rely on volunteers to do the work is, to me, it's something that is definitely needed, the staff, in order for the commission to be successful.
Okay, great. Thank you. Other questions for the bill sponsor? Yes, Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Celeste, for bringing this bill forward.
I'll get the microphone here. Just a couple questions. Is this basically the way the commission was back in 93 when it was, or 96 whenever it was terminated?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And then I noticed that you're required to do a publication, and I'm sure there'll be meeting costs, probably travel costs. Was there a fiscal note attached to this, and we just didn't get it, or?
I didn't get it.
I haven't seen a fiscal note for 2011. The fiscal note that I have from 2009 indicates that there was travel costs and per diem, and it didn't, and three personnel. So let me see if I have a 2009.
Let me just, Senator Meyer, my staff's just informed me we have not yet received a fiscal note
okay.
on the bill. There, I would note there is a finance referral for the bill. So
yeah. Mr. Chair, I'm not too concerned, other than it's, you know, it's always good to know how expensive a new commission is that you're approving, but this is a finance issue. I don't disagree. And then I guess finally, I think you limit it to six consecutive years. Is there any particular reason why six? I guess you probably want to have turnover of the commission. Is that the thought?
I'm not sure why originally they went with the six, but I did see that the membership, they stagger and of the commission, and so they would turn over every six.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Other questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to public testimony, and we do have quite a bit of public testimony, and we have another resolution after this, plus the confirmation hearing for Commissioner Butcher. So I know people have a lot to say. I'm just that in the issue of timeliness, I'm going to have to limit testimony to three minutes. So first up, let's go to the Mat-Su LIO, where we have Katie Hurley on the line. Katie, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Well, welcome to the committee. If you could put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Bill. I speak in support of Senate Bill 53. I was executive director of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women for 3 years, 1980 to 1983. The seven public members appointed by the governor were outstanding women from rural Alaska to Fairbanks, Anchorage, Juneau, and it included one male. I had the opportunity to hire new staff, and for most of my 3 years, the three women and I I hired worked as a team. We became fast friends, and even though they have moved out of Alaska, we still have an annual phone call to keep in touch. Our biggest achievement was a statewide conference in Anchorage attended by 1,000 women. We were part of the office of the governor as far as budget, but we were not controlled. There was a lot of trust and cooperation, and we worked under two governors. I'll keep it short and be happy to answer any questions.
Edie, thank you for your testimony. And are there questions? And thank you for your incredible service to our state. I see no questions. Let's move on to in the room. We've got a number of people signed up. Let's start out with Annabelle Stevens. Annabelle, welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Senators. My name is Annabelle Stevens, and I'm from Anchorage, Alaska. And part of my testimony will sort of be redundant to what Celeste said, but the commission was established in 1978, and it was to address the status of women in the home, in the workplace, and in the community, and to achieve equal legal and economic, social, and political status for women. And, of course, the powers that be merged it with the human relations, which never got funded, and thus the Women's Commission just sort of faded away. Now, some decades later, there's more women out in the workplace today because of financial needs and such of families, and the wages have not changed. As Les said, in Alaska, women earn 66.6 cents on a dollar compared to men. Now, that's not to say there aren't women out there that earn more than that, but when you average it out, this is what it comes out to. And there is a significant difference between rural Alaska and urban. And the size of the state makes the plight of women even more difficult to address. It's time to step up, reinstate the Women's Commission, and assess the needs of the women, prioritize them, and then get the commission in going again and address them and do something about the plight of women.
Thank you for your testimony, Annabelle. Good to see you again. Questions? Seeing none. Let's move on next to Karen Robinson. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, and for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here speaking on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby today, and would like to thank you for hearing the bill. We would like to strongly go in support for reestablishment of the Alaska Women's Commission, Senate Bill 53. I thought I'd spend a little bit of my time today since, you know, probably there's very few of us. I'm glad to have Annabelle and Katie online, who actually used to attend those meetings, actually sat in the old Belts room as I watched the demise of the commission, and many of us walked out quite amazed and concerned when that occurred. There's recently has been a report out by the president, and I thought I'd just read a few things from that that would give you some ideas what a women's commission could do again in doing some comparisons. Basically, it says, while the population of both men and women are aging, women continue to outnumber men at older ages. Fewer women are married than in the past. Women are giving birth to their first child at an older age. Women more likely than men to be in poverty. Women gain education attainment have significant outpaced those of men over the last 40 years, which is very interesting. Higher percentage of women than men ages 25 to 34 have earned a college degree. After decades of significant increases, the labor force participation rate for women has held steadily in recent years. So these are just some things that I think are some great questions that we could re-look at in Alaska to see how we stand regarding those issues. Under violence, it states here that homicide of females declined between 1993 and to 2008. Again, that's something we seem to see in our state as rising, not declining. So again, it would be interesting to see where we stand within the rest of the nation. I brought just for fun because I'm probably about the only person who still has them in my files, some of the work of the Women's Commission, which I think all of you would find very, very fun and interesting. One is, what about the boys? Teenage pregnancy prevention strategies. Young women of Alaska speak out about dropout. And again, talking about the young women who have dropped out in the state and why. This was the 5 years later after the commission, looking at the status of what and how things were moving forward for women are still going backwards. Another great one, profile and change, names and notes and quote from Alaska women. So these are some of the documents and some of the work that the Women's Commission did. They were definitely the group that kept all of us together and organized. I was fortunate that they were around when we originally set up the Council on Domestic Violence and really helped us establish that. Thank you.
Karen, thank you for your testimony. Okay, next up we have Marie Darlin. Welcome to the committee. Good to see you again.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Marie Darlin, and I'm representing AARP. And I believe if you don't have a letter of support already, you will have one shortly. And I just want to say that there's no sense in going through what both Katie and Karen have already told you, because their knowledge of what was done previously, you know, is really great. And the women's initiative of AARP was quite active in the late 80s, early 90s, and AARP did spend a lot of their time at that time on women's issues. And they have since moved on to broader things and others, as most organizations do, but they still have the interest in what the issues are that women face today. I think it's interesting to note that when we first started, those of us that were involved in all of these types of issues, women made 59% of what men do, and I see now the latest figure is 66, which shows there's some improvement, but we have a long way to go. And so I won't spend any more of your time other than to say that AARP has always supported the women's commissions in the different states and will continue to do so. And so we do hope that this, again, becomes a part of the administration's efforts then to address the issues.
Thank you for your testimony, Marie. Okay, next up, we have several people signed up on the off-nets. And if we could go to Arlene Suzanne Smalley.
Good morning. This is Susan Smalley. I'm from the Kenai Peninsula, and I served on the Women's Commission until 1990. And at that point in time, I was primarily a homemaker, mother of two boys, wife, volunteer, 20-year Alaskan. 20 years later, here we are, I'm a grandmother, mother, wife, volunteer. I volunteered at Alternative High School, a middle school, at Wildwood Correctional, at Highland Mountain Women's Prison. And I've worked since then for 8 years on an international group in my denomination doing similar work. And I've never said this aloud, and this may as well be a time where I'm going to say it, but I'm a senior citizen, so I'm looking at it from different perspectives now. But I think that this establishment, reestablishment goes along so much with the domestic violence focus of Governor Parnell. And I also was looking at the figures in the legislature. And 20 years ago, when that was the closing of the commission, 25% of the Senate was female. And 20 years later, the numbers, 75% male. The House is nearly identical. So those are important points to me, because I think that while there are some very good men who serve and hear the voices, that very often those issues are more apt to be brought up. And so we need to be able to hear the diversity of voices. And one of the references was made to a publication called Profiles in Women, and I'm going to close with a quote from that. But first of all, I'd like to say that it's really critical for young women, because I work with young women, and I realize that in some ways they're stuck back farther than I was. And if you look at domestic violence, you can see that some of those attitudes and things are carrying on, and we need it for information gathering, we need it for networking, we need it for education, and we have such an incredible advantage now because we can be electronic. It's expensive to provide materials, and it's hard to get them out, but we have electronics to do that with now. We have conference call settings. We can do a lot online. So a lot of those things that I needed as a younger mother and wife, I need as a senior as well. And I'd just like to close with a quote from Lisa Rudd in the back of the book Profiles. No one ever solves community problems alone. You need help, allies, and mentors all along the way. And this reestablishment of the commission is one way to help Alaskan women, young, old, and in between, to be full participants in Alaska. And Alaska will benefit as well as all those individual people. So I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Smalley. Next up, we have Regina Manteuffel. Welcome, Regina.
Hello, my name is Regina Manteuffel, and I'm the creator of the Back to Work Network conferences. And what we do is we put on quarterly conferences where we give women interview outfits, haircuts, makeup, proper shoes, and we totally make them over. But we also work on the psychological and career part of the event. And I'm finding that there are very few Dress for Success events like what I do. I have lots of friends that donate clothes, and we have 4 feet by 50 feet of clothes in movable boxes that we set up. But the problem is that there's not enough funding, and because of the definitions of the Department of Labor for things, the money has not trickled down this way. I'm finding that if we get the young ladies that are in teenagers in school, for instance, on the 18th from 3:30 to 6 o'clock, we will be dressing up the teenage girls in outfits to keep them in school. And I think that in order to advance the status of women, we need to make sure that if the teenage girls are not adequately dressed for school, that they need to be referred to this conference that we have, or that they need to create clothes closets in high schools to adequately dress them so that they feel good. For example, if a girl doesn't have the proper tennis shoes in PE or doesn't have the shoes, she may not show up for PE. Then next, her grade isn't good in PE. Then her GPA goes down, and then it makes it harder for her to advance. It's when you look at poverty and advancement from poverty. I have 26 years of running a rooming house here in Fairview, and a lot of the stereotypes are that they've gotten pregnant, they've dropped out of school. Yes, Mark Bakage's sister has a good school in Mountain View for the pregnant girls, but when they drop out of school, there is not enough of a safety net to pick them up and keep them going. At a recent school board candidates forum, I mentioned how that they could have a video of the classroom online for each grade level for what they should be learning in math and what they should be learning in English and spelling so that they can start. If they miss school, they can, and they're sick and they're at home, that they can be able to advance themselves regardless of the situation.
Hey, Regina,
you know, as a child,
we're really, can I ask you to wrap it up? We're really, we've got quite a number of people.
You didn't tell me my time limit. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I set myself for 5 minutes, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, if I could
anyway,
just.
Anyway, so basically, we need to make sure that the young girls in school knows about the grants and the scholarships available so that they can advance themselves in life. And I don't think that it's a regular thing where they are learning about the grants and scholarships, and we have them online. So that's it. The website's www.backtoworknetwork.org. And our conference is open to all women, and it's the 18th and 19th of April. 18th, it is from 11 a.m. until 3:30 p.m., and then 3:30 p.m. to 6 p.m. for the teenage girls. And then the following day, it is from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Fairview Community Center, 1121 East 10th Avenue, Anchorage, Alaska, on bus line number 13. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay,
please reestablish this commission. Thank you.
Thank you, Regina. Next up, we have Yvonne Gutierrez.
Hi, my name is Yvonne Gutierrez, and I am calling on behalf of myself. I'm a community volunteer in Anchorage, and I'm also a civil rights investigator. I support the reestablishment of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, and there are many reasons that this commission should exist, some of which include to, one, monitor the status of sexual assaults against women, two, monitor domestic violence against women, three, monitor employment status and equal opportunity compliance, i.e. through affirmative action, which in many companies and government agencies is no longer enforced or monitored, four, monitor the status of sexual harassment in the workplace, five, monitor access to health care for women, six, monitor or serve as a clearinghouse of agencies that assist women to be successful in overcoming all of these challenges. For these reasons, I support this legislation and ask all senators to unite to see that this commission is reestablished. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Yvonne. Next up, we have Joy Green Armstrong.
Yes, good morning. I'm calling to say I am in support of the Senate bill, and I applaud Senator Davis and the other senators that are verging ahead with this. I am a former commissioner and former chair, and all I can say is that our state benefited much from the status of women in the Women's Commission when I sat on the commission. We looked at issues such as the legal issues as they apply to families, violence against women, and traveled around the state and took testimony, heard about inequities in education. We looked at daycare and child care for women, single mothers, mothers who were trapped in a welfare status without the ability to advance their education for fear of losing those welfare benefits. We were able to look at the family law system within the court system and see the inequities. When a woman was divorced or a family pulled apart, it was often the woman that suffered. She ended up with the children, and oftentimes was left with less than enough income to support them, finding herself losing her home or possibly, if not homeless, in a situation that was far worse than what she left. Where I'd like to see the commission go is exactly where it was when it left off, when it sunset. I was on the commission when it sunset. After the commission, I went off and I completed my law school education and I did my master's in business, and I came back to the state. And as an assistant district attorney, I saw in Anchorage more domestic violence and women and children continue to suffer. I also believe that if the commission was reestablished, it could also help in areas of looking at the bench. There are far less women on the bench in Alaska than there should be in Anchorage, especially. Just in closing, I won't prolong my testimony today, but I sincerely hope that the state legislators see the advantage of having all citizens equal in terms of pay, in terms of law, in terms of accessibility in education, and I believe nothing but good would come of this legislation, and I wholeheartedly support. Let me say, when I did come back, in closing, I continued my volunteer efforts. I am now on the board of the YWCA, and I have been on the board for the homeless young women at the Salvation Army at Booth Home for Girls. And we see a lot of young girls coming in from the villages. I think the Women's Commission would be able to look at some of these things happening and, again, do nothing but good for the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joy. Next up, we have Hattie Gardner.
Good morning.
Morning.
My name is Hattie Gardner. I am past state president of the Alaska Federation of Business and Professional Women. I have been active in this organization holding various positions since 1976. I am also the mother of four daughters and grandmother of two grandchildren. I have been in the workplace for over 50 years as a young single person, as a wife and mother, and now as a widow. Needless to say, I am a senior citizen. I am retired from the municipality of Anchorage, but own my own business. I am more than ever in support of the reestablishment of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women. I was in Juneau a couple of years ago attending the Women's Summit, and I did get the opportunity to testify at the here and there, just as I'm doing today. The reestablishment of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women would also include children. Women are still the major caregivers in the family, even with more of them working full-time jobs and heading households than ever before, compounded with earning substantially less than men in the workplace. We need an agency that will track and report on these injustices. I am especially supportive in establishing any arm of the legislature that will maintain statistics and report on the violence that is perpetrated against the women in our society and state. It is a shame that we are leading the nation in this area of violence against women. The statistics that the commission will gather will hopefully help to police and curtail these actions. Any spotlighting on this violence will also bring attention to the many children that are being abused in all areas of our state, even those who are supposedly in protective areas under our government. In the past, the Alaska Federation of Business and Professional Women has supported a fly-in and sponsored a fly-in in March. So over the years, since 1945, when we were established in the state of Alaska, we have always had a legislative arm that supported such statuses or such as this commission. And so we are still in support of the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, as we have been in the past. I speak in favor and hope that the legislators will reestablish the Alaska Commission on the State of Women.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Gardner. Is there anyone else online wanting to testify on this bill? Hearing none. Is there anyone else in the room wanting to testify? Seeing none, we're going to close public. That's for the House. I have a number of people signed up for House Concurrent Resolution Number 6, which is coming next. Okay. If come on up. That's fine. Welcome to the committee, Kathy.
Well, thanks very much, Senator, and thanks for your time. And I'll be very brief because everybody spoke very well on this issue. I'm Kathy Dietrich. I'm from Fairbanks, and My current work is with a Women in the Trades program. I work for Alaska Works Partnership part-time, and we have a program that's designed to help prepare women for work in non-traditional employment in the construction trades. And our program tries to help them by removing barriers, and often I see women who come from domestic violence situations and low socioeconomic environments. Women are extremely underrepresented in the trades, and they miss out on careers that can provide good wages and, almost more importantly, good benefits, including retirement, which impacts so many women once they are seniors. The commission would benefit women in Alaska for all the reasons mentioned by previous speakers and by focusing attention on the need for training and opportunities for women in Alaska. And that's all I have.
Thank you, Kathy. Good to see you. Garen Tarr, why don't you just come on up? I have a number of people signed up for House Concurrent Resolution 6, so not sure who wants to testify on this one. Please put yourself on the record.
Chair Wilkowski, members of the committee, my name is Portia Wu. I'm Vice President of the National Partnership for Women and Families. We're a nonpartisan advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. We advocate for equal treatment for women, policies supporting them at work and at home, and also health care and equal access to health care for all. I'll just say briefly, as has been mentioned by the other witnesses, the status of women in employment in Alaska and around the country has changed dramatically. Not only are women making up nearly 50% of the workforce, but their earnings are absolutely critical to working families. And one statistic I want to highlight for the committee is nationally, 40% of working mothers are bringing home the majority of the income in their household, over 50%. Two-thirds of working mothers are bringing home at least 25% of their family income. That means that families are absolutely dependent on working women's wages. As has been mentioned, women are also the majority of bachelor's degree holders. Very recently, they became the majority of PhD and higher degree holders as well. So they are the future of our economy. Of the top 10 jobs estimated to be created in our country in the next 10 years, they are all in professions where women dominate. So, but yet, despite these trends, women are still paid far less on average than men. Pregnancy discrimination claims continue to climb, despite the fact that we have laws outlawing pregnancy discrimination. If you look at the civil rights complaints here in Alaska, for example, a huge portion of those complaints are based on discrimination based on sex. So we still have a tremendous distance to travel. I'll close by saying there are over 270 commissions on women around the country at the state and city level. They address many important issues, not only employment discrimination, but also encouraging women in fields, non-traditional fields, the trades, science, technology, engineering, and math fields. They look at questions of domestic violence and many of the other questions that are very pressing for women and families' economic security. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for your testimony. Garen Tarr, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. And I'll just be brief. My name is Garen Tarr. I'm here for the Women's Summit, but I also am the chair of the Anchorage Women's Commission. And so we are busy in Anchorage trying to deal with some of these issues, and we could certainly use some support from other women around the state. So I think if we could reestablish the Alaska Commission on the Status of Women, we'd have an opportunity to increase the impact of our work. We'd have a better understanding of what's happening statewide, and I think it would be a nice complement to our work. So thank you.
Anyone else in the room wanting to testify? Come on up, Clover.
Sorry, I also submitted on the wrong list.
That's okay.
Thank you. I'll just be very brief. Clover Simon from Planned Parenthood of the Great Northwest. And I think the benefit of the Women's Summit, I support everything that's currently been said. But I think specifically in terms of the issue of family planning, currently Planned Parenthood is the main advocate for family planning. And as we know, family planning allows women to adequately space their children, and it's better for the families. They end up having healthier children, healthier families, and in turn, healthier communities. Unfortunately, because of the controversial nature of some of the work that Planned Parenthood does, our voice, and I think the voice for family planning in Alaska, is often lost. And I think the Women's Commission could be an important non-controversial voice that could further look at the impact of family planning and the disparities around family planning for many women across Alaska. So with that, Planned Parenthood wholeheartedly supports another voice looking at health care access and specifically at family planning access for women around the state. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Clover. Anyone else in the room wanting to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none now, I'm going to close public testimony. And let's move on to, we're going to set the bill aside. It's our policy typically not to move bills on the first hearing. We will set this bill aside to give members an opportunity to take other input and propose amendments. We're going to move on very quickly. We're way behind schedule. House concurrent resolution number 6 and designating April 2011 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. This resolution is sponsored by Representative Costello. Welcome to the committee. As committee members are no doubt aware, Alaska has the highest rate of sexual assault in the nation, 2.5 times the national average. Anything we do to increase public awareness of this issue is a good thing. Welcome to the committee, Representative Costello.
Thank you, Senator, and thank you, members of the committee. House Concurrent Resolution 6 declares the month of April in Alaska to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month. The legislature, since 2007, has been declaring a month every year as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I have introduced this concurrent resolution to do so for this year. In Alaska, we have some alarming statistics surrounding sexual assault. 1 in 3 women will be a victim, 1 in 4 girls, 1 in 6 boys, and 1 man out of every 11 will be a victim of sexual assault. So what this resolution aims to do by naming the month of April to be Sexual Assault Awareness Month is to provide important heightened awareness around this issue. By declaring a month this way, it allows those service providers and communities across Alaska to focus on this issue 1 month, and it's an important opportunity that would not exist if we did not name this month Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I wanted to mention, too, for the members that in the room we have Rick Savodny, who's the Deputy Attorney General, and also Peggy Brown, who's joined us, who's the Executive Director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence. And with that, I would like to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Ms. Costello. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. We'll move on to public testimony, and we have looks like a couple people signed up, and we're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes. We have Rick Savodny. If you could come forward, please. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rick Savodny. I'm the Deputy Attorney General for the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. I speak for the administration throughout all departments in regards to it. Our strong support for this resolution. I prepared some remarks that dealt with the statistics. The chair has already referred to them. The sponsor has referred to them, and the reason I think that we all talk about them is precisely the reason that we need this resolution. The more awareness we have as a state about the problem that we have in this area, the more likely we're going to be able to solve this problem. My people, the people in the Department of Law, play just one small part of the puzzle in fixing this problem, and that's holding offenders accountable. I view this resolution as a holistic approach dealing with informing the public, education, and most importantly, changing the culture that we have. We're not going to lick this problem until we deal with it like we make the cultural change that we did with drunk driving or with smoking or with other things. So we need a kind of a holistic approach and to set aside an entire month to look at the different aspects of this problem, I think takes us a long way down the road to solving this problem. I try to answer any questions that the committee
has. Thank you, Mr. Svobodny, if you could hold on. Any questions? I have one quick question for you, slightly off topic to this resolution, but does the administration support the reestablishment of the Women's Commission?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know the answer to that. The governor's office asked me to come. Actually, the attorney general wanted to be here today, and he was catching a flight and couldn't make it by phone or in person, so they asked me to appear on this bill.
Okay. Fair enough. If you could get back to us on that next time the bill comes up, I appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, next up we have Peggy Brown. Yeah, good to see you, Peggy. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Peggy Brown. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. And I wanted to briefly give a nod to some of the women that were just recently in this room with prior Alaska Women's Commissions. We stand on some of the shoulders of some of those women that were in here. In regards to the continuing resolution for Sexual Assault Awareness Month, a couple of things, you know, domestic violence and sexual assault are very difficult issues to talk about. And there's a common public misperception about how sexual assault plays out in our state. And also, that perception contributes to the shame and stigma and victim blaming that happens. People in our state have a certain idea of what a sexual assault victim is. And they also have ideas of what a perpetrator is. And that's not indicative of just people in our state. It's across the nation. The idea that there is someone within your own circle of family and friends who can commit these crimes is something that we don't want to talk about, we don't want to deal with. And yet you hear the numbers, and an additional number I would add, not only one in three women, but also 10% of Alaskan youth in high school. 10% have experienced some type of sexual violence in their lives. And in those recent studies with the one in three women, I might add that about 10,600 adult women last year were victims of sexual violence. And I think those numbers kind of bring it home. Also, with this Awareness Month, I think that you'll see that there's a lot of things going on, victim service agencies across the state, with the march. It's an important topic. It's an important issue. And I'm really glad to see Representative Costello bring it forward, because what we have to do is make sure that we're publicly educating people and allowing space to talk about it, because if we don't, we are inadvertently colluding with perpetrators by kind of silencing that victim and also silencing the work that we can do for future generations of perpetration. So with that, I thank you for your attention to this bill and am open to any questions you might have.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. Thanks for all your work on this important topic as well. Do we have anyone else in the room signed up to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, do we have anyone else online signed up to testify? I don't see anyone. Okay, hearing none, I'm going to close public testimony. We're going to set this bill, this resolution aside to give members an opportunity to prepare any amendments, and hope to take it up in the near future. Thank you, Representative Costello. Okay, let's move on now to a confirmation hearing of Commissioner Designee Brian Butcher. I see he's coming into the room right now. We told him 9:45 expected, so we're actually not too far off of what we had predicted. Let's take a short at ease. Time is 9:52, and we'll move on to the Commissioner of Revenue, Commissioner Designee Butcher's confirmation hearing. Commissioner, welcome to the committee. I know you're a busy man. I appreciate you taking the time to come and speak to us. So if you could put yourself on the record, tell us a little bit about your background and qualifications to serve as a state revenue commissioner, why you're interested in doing this job, and give us a brief introductory statement.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brian Butcher, commissioner designee for the Department of Revenue. And just a little bit of an introduction. My grandfather worked on the Alaska Highway, and he had just recently graduated from law school. And he got to Anchorage, looked at Anchorage in the 1940s, and decided that this was a place that needed an attorney. I can't even imagine what Anchorage looked like in the 1940s, and I can't even imagine what my grandmother and her three children thought when they left Seattle and got to Anchorage, but that's where he made home. And in the late 60s, he left his law practice, and Governor Hickel appointed him to be a Superior Court judge, Harold J. Butcher. He was the first family court judge in the state. And at the time, as a child, I had a difficult time understanding why he would leave a profitable law practice to take a much lower paying job as a judge. And this is actually going to lead to my career, so just to let you know. But I talked to him after he retired about it, and he spent quite a bit of time talking about when you get to a point in your life where what you're doing for the public and what you're doing for the good means something. And I really took that to heart, and I don't think I would be sitting here today if we hadn't had that conversation. Born and raised in Anchorage, went to the same high school, West Anchorage High School, that my father did. My kids are 7 and 9. They go to the same elementary school in the same building that my father did, which is not unusual in rural Alaska, but in this state, in urban Alaska, it's pretty unusual. Went out to college at the University of Oregon, like many Alaskans did, and came back afterwards for two main reasons. One was the forgiveness student loan program that I know a lot of friends that are still here as a result of that program. And also my father, who was a small contractor in the state, had a dream that he and I would build a house together someday. So I committed to him for 2 years out of college that I would work on a house, and we built the family house that my parents still live in Spinard. And I had intended on going to law school, and this is probably a story you hear from a lot of people that intended to go to law school and didn't, which is I thought I'd take a couple of years off and do something else, and next thing I know, here I am. But late 80s, I took a job with Senator Rick Ewling, who was the co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee. And I was very fortunate to have an opportunity to start my legislative career in the co-chair's office, because as you know, working in an office in this building with a lot of responsibility exposes you to a lot more than I would have been, you know, in some other circumstances. So I worked for him for 3 years. One of those years, the first year he was the co-chairman of the Finance Committee, he retired, and I went to work for Senator Steve Rieger, who I worked with for 4 years, and as his finance aide, dealing with issues coming through the committee as well as the budgets. His priority legislation was permanent fund legislation. He had worked on the development of the permanent fund when he had worked for Senator Sturgalewski in the legislature, and now he's on the permanent fund board with me, so some things come full circle. And then he retired. I did a few other things, helped out with the tobacco-free kids group to get the tobacco tax passed in the legislature in 1997. I went back into state service for Representative Terry Martin. It was his last year, and I did the Department of Revenue's budget as well as all of his finance work. Then he retired, and probably should have told the governor before I took this job that everybody I work for ends up retiring. But so then I went to work for Representative Terrio, who was the co-chair of the House Finance Committee, with the responsibility of the state's capital budget as well as all the other finance issues that came through the committee. And I then spent 2 years working for Senator Pete Kelly in the co-chair of the Senate Finance Committee, where I also was in charge of the state's capital budget as well as other finance issues coming through the committee. And then Senator Kelly retired. I then took a job at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, working for Dan Fauske, as I'm sure most of you know Dan, and which was a tremendous experience for me, not just in terms of watching how he ran a sizable state agency, but also he gets his fingers in just about everything. So whereas I think when he started, it was focused on public housing and the mortgage side of things, and bonds and issues like that, by the time I got there, we were working on things as varied as the purchase of the Atwood building, the beginning of the financing for the state prison that's being built, although that then went to the Department of Revenue after a couple of years, tobacco bonds for state capital projects. Dan and I both were asked by Governor Palin to serve on the AGEA team, where our focus was on the financing and bonding aspects of the proposals that were coming in. And Governor Palin also asked me to chair the Department of Revenue's transition team when she came in 8 years ago, which I was happy to do. And then for the last few years, I have worked, for the last about 5 years, I became the director of public affairs and governmental relations for the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, in charge of our relationships with the legislature, the governor, Congress, the administration, as well as doing a lot of work in the finance side of things. I've given dozens of presentations to the rating agencies in Wall Street, and Dan gave me the latitude to have some influence in the policy issues and some of the areas that I was passionate about. Over the last 6 months coming into this job, I served most of my time as the vice president for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, which was Representative Chenault's bill that passed last session and established a corporation to put together a plan by July 1st of this year that would build, that would put a plan together to put together a financing and operational construction design for an in-state gas pipeline that would be operational by December 31st of 2015. I was in charge of the budget for the corporation, and was, as well as our commercial manager, Michael Rosaretta, we did the outreach to the gas pipeline construction companies, investment banks, producers, in terms of getting a gauge on their interest in the project going forward, which is part of what's statutorily required of us to do as part of that plan. So it's kind of interesting that I did some work on AGEA. I then ended up doing work on the bullet line, and now I'm back on the AGEA side of things for the governor. The governor, right after his election, asked me to head his transition team. And that's something that I did. I was perfectly happy working at the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. But when he did name me head of the transition team, I had a feeling I probably would be getting another phone call. And as a result, a few weeks later, he asked me to be his commissioner of revenue, which I was certainly very humbled at the offer and accepted. So as you can look, as you can see on my resume, my focus throughout my adult career has been in the revenue finance side of things, as well as very much in public service. So that's what brings me here today, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner. I guess I'll start out just a general question. We hear a lot of different numbers on savings, how much savings the state has. What is your, how much savings do we have as a state? I've heard $11 billion, I've heard $15 billion. Where are we at as a state with savings?
Mr. Chairman, we have a little over, it obviously varies by the day and by the month, but we have a little over $10 billion in the CBR. We have, when you add in all the other funds, the statutory budget reserve, the Alaska Housing Capital Corporation has about $360 million. What's in other funds, it adds up to any given day between $12 and $14 billion, but I can certainly get you a to the day detail on that.
Thank you. And what, there's been some talk about how we should be managing our savings. I know the Finance Committee, and this is not the Finance Committee, but you're here before us. What's sort of your philosophy on how we should be managing our savings, our CBR? Should we be sort just socking that away for the rainy day, or should we be investing that in high growth stocks or investing that in state projects? I mean, what's sort of your philosophy on that?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. My personal philosophy, and it's something that I've developed all my years working in the Finance Committee, is that this is very much the people's money. It's not the governor's money. It's not the Commissioner of Revenue's money. It's the people's money. And as a result, I tend to take a more conservative view towards that investment. There was a period of time where when our CBR balance was very low, that things had to be invested very conservatively in fixed income so that we would have the cash flow available given what happened with the oil price and production coming in. Now we're fortunate in that we have more reserves available, and it can be invested on a more longer-term basis, not all of it, but a good percentage of it. So my outlook on that would tend to be on the conservative side, but certainly would look at very much a diversification, similar to what we've seen with the permanent fund, where you don't want any one area to really put a substantial dent in your investments. And the way the permanent fund does it is investing long-term, so you've got good growth when, say, the equities market goes up, but it's not invested so high risk that you take a big hit when things drop. So I think we end up giving up a little bit on the high end because we're not as aggressively invested with a little bit more protection in the low end.
And Senator Meyer, you might have a question.
If I may, and again, this isn't the Finance Committee, so we won't get too heavy into that, but you are the Commissioner Designee of Revenue, and the concern I have, obviously, and I think everyone here, is 85% of our revenue comes from one source, and we know that source is declining 5, 6, 7% a year. What's the solution?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Meyer, the solution is, the situation we're in, and this is something that obviously I've been before many of you in discussion on the governor's SB 49, is trying to generate more production through the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Obviously, diversification of our economy is a big issue, too. It's something that we've all been talking about for many years. We've had some success in it. I think tourism is doing much better than it was doing 20 years ago. But ultimately, we haven't been tremendously successful in getting us off of the reliance on oil. And that's one of the things that puts us in a difficult situation, and that this state is far more reliant on oil production than the oil industry is reliant on Alaska's oil production. That's something that's going to take more than just a tax bill. It's the governor's feeling, as well as mine, that that can play a major role in spurring additional production. But this is also something that DOT is working on with Roads to Resources. We're now dealing with areas of potential exploration that doesn't have infrastructure near it. It is going to be pretty expensive, and anything we can do to help open up those fields for exploration is a positive, as well as what DNR is doing in completely revisiting their permitting process to make sure it's as expedited, as responsible, yet as expedited as possible. Department of Law dealing with federal issues. So this is kind of a full court press on every front to try to increase production to the state.
Okay. I realize that's an unfair question and a very broad question, but it's obviously a major concern to all of us.
Mm-hmm. Other questions by committee members? Let's move on to the permanent fund, and you are a member of the permanent fund board. Can you talk a little bit how the permanent fund is managed, sort of your philosophy on the permanent fund? Is it a rainy day? I know there's a big argument. Was it set aside to be the rainy day fund for Alaskans, or should we be using it as an endowment in the future? If you could talk a little bit about your philosophy on the permanent fund.
Sure. I'm actually very much looking forward into getting more involved in the permanent fund. As I'm sure you know, they have moved to a little bit different investment philosophy over the last few years. They're looking more at emerging markets, which have really had a boom over the last few years. They're also taking a look at active and passive and what value that we're receiving. And that's something we're looking at in the Treasury Division as well for active management compared to passive. Active tends to have a little bit higher yield than passive, but is it worth what you're paying to get that more active management? So most of, and I've only had one meeting on the Permanent Fund Board, but most of the direction they go, I've generally agreed with at this point, although there's certainly a lot more digging into it I'd like to do. It ideally, the Permanent Fund would remain something that would be a payer out of dividends and would continue to grow over time, and I feel confident that it's going to be the case, certainly in the near term and hopefully in the longer term. But I am aware that it does become a political issue at times if we do get to a situation again where we're getting into the difficult position of having to weigh a state income tax or a state sales tax or use of the funds.
Okay. Next, if you could talk a little bit about the status of the retirement system. There was a report issued by the Pew Center on the states last February that ranked Alaska in the bottom third of all states for funding pensions. And the report noted that between 1999 and 2008, the pension bill in Alaska grew 86%, but the money on hand to pay for it only increased 35%. And by 2008, the system was only three-quarters funded, leaving a $3.5 billion gap. If you could talk about, to your knowledge, the current status of the state retirement funds and if you have any plans or recommendations to close this funding gap.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Right now, I think we're at just under $10 billion in terms of what our unfunded liability is. It's closed somewhat with the market coming back. And I think you can look at different numbers on how Alaska ranks with other states. I do know we're one of the few states that include what we think our potential health care costs are as part of evaluating our entire liability, and that's something that very few states do. And the rating agencies in the last few months have been saying that's now something they're going to take into consideration. So that's something that's been certainly a positive in the state, because there are many states that fund the health care responsibilities for their retirees on a fiscal year by fiscal year basis. We unfortunately are not in that situation. We've planned a little bit more ahead than those states have. But it is something that's certainly a concern and something that we're going to have to attempt to get under control. I have only had one meeting on the Retirement Management Board, but I'm very interested in seeing what the actuaries' assumptions are. We certainly had an issue with that a few years ago and a lawsuit as a result that I'm sure you're all aware of. And until you kind of understand what the assumptions are and how they got to those assumptions, you don't have an entirely good snapshot of exactly what it is we are looking at. So that's something that I haven't had the opportunity to take a look at yet.
Great. Next, I had a sort of on a personal, not personal, but a constituent-related issue on child support services. I had a constituent say that they were told it may take 6 months to complete a review process on a request to modify a child support order. And this constituent also reported problems with paperwork being misplaced by child support services. And is it your understanding that CSS is adequately staffed and functioning the way it needs to function to serve Alaskans? Is that an agency that you think has some staffing issues or other problems that need to be addressed?
Mr. Chairman, in taking a look at child support services and having the limited amount of time I've had in this position to take a look at it, it appears as if they seem to be doing better than they were a few years ago. It's a very difficult division. The issue itself is a very difficult issue, and I have, and as I've gone around and talked to all legislators, most of them seem pretty well satisfied with the response they're getting. However, I have had a few comments similar to yours, Mr. Chairman, that there are some issues that need to be taken care of, and that's something that I will be taking a look at, because I understand not just the importance of that division, but also what a difficult situation it is for the Alaskans involved in it, and how it's something that has to have the highest level of staffing and response as a result.
Thank you. Senator Pascoe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the first reports that we received when we first arrived here at the start of the session was that January 18th, 2011 report from the Department of Revenue. And one of the remarkable pieces of information in that dealt with information processing deficiencies in the state. You know, we're in the 21st century, and it seems like some of the processing capabilities are not quite there yet. And so anyway, on the information processing capacity, and then also on the holes in that information that may be necessary in order to have a more appropriate view of the tax structure and the impacts, for example, of credits. And so on those two areas, if you could expand on what the Department of Revenue is going to do to get the information processing up to full, you know, full capacity, and then filling the holes so that better policy can be adopted.
Sure. Through the chair, Senator Pasvan, I know that when we first started to dig into this issue, I assumed that our lack of information, and specifically in kind of a breakdown of OPEX and CAPEX in terms of where it's going with the industry and where it's not, was a result of a statutory limitation that the department had. And as I dug into it, I realized that, in fact, that's not the case. It's a regulatory issue. It's something that the department just had not put in regulation that the industry would break these things down. That's certainly something we're going to be pursuing. The way the regulations have been done the last few years in between the Department of Revenue and the industry that has seemed to be highly effective is kind of a workshop-type process where we work through the regulations with the industry, getting the back and forth to make sure that we get everything we need while at the same time they understand what it is we're asking for. And that's something that I very much will include the legislature in. All of your offices will be contacted if you have an interest or your staff has an interest in sitting in this process to make sure we get exactly what it is we feel we need to be able to evaluate things, because this isn't just a Department of Revenue issue. Policymakers need to have the information as a result. So that's something that we're going to be doing, you know, as soon as the legislative session gets over and we have the tax division has time to focus on that issue. In terms of the database, you're absolutely correct. This is an issue that needs to be dealt with. It was in the governor's budget a couple of years ago, I think, and did not get funded. It then was in the current year's budget at $100,000, I believe, maybe $200,000. I can't remember exactly the number. Gather together more information to get a more accurate number of what we, number one, what we think we need out of it, and number two, a pretty good estimate on what the dollar amount is, which is something we're currently doing, because I'm sure you've probably been, I know Senator Meyer certainly has seen situations in state government where agencies come in and they say they need a database, and they make a compelling case for the database, and they come in, and then the next year they say, well, I know we said we thought it would. We only needed $15 million, but we need another $10 million, and that doesn't make the legislature happy. It doesn't make the governor happy, and I'm sure it doesn't make the commissioner that's trying to get the additional funds happy. So that's something I very much will be pushing forward. I've talked to the governor's office about it. The Department of Administration is currently putting together kind of a broader view of what needs to be done in all of state government with databases, which ones potentially might need to talk to others. I don't think that this is one that necessarily has to have all of that. So that's something that I will be pursuing, because a database that gives us information, you know, will certainly be of benefit, and probably one of the few databases that you will provide in state government that will pay for itself, which isn't I would imagine would pay for itself, which isn't the norm, obviously, with most of state government.
Just as a follow-up, you know, in that report, it addresses capital expenditures, and certainly Alaska has a credit structure that is connected with the capital expenditures. And, you know, the trouble that I'm having is without having an understanding as to whether the capital expenditures that Alaska currently has are working, is how do we direct policy when we don't know whether, you know, in addition to deducting those capital expenditures, they get a 20% credit for that. And so if we don't know whether they're working because of the lack of information, how can we change policy without just shooting in the dark?
Through the chair, Senator Passavant, I agree that it makes the task much more difficult when we're limited on the amount of information that we have and that we can provide you.
And this is not a new issue. I know I pulled up a presentation that was given October 19, 2007 from Gaffney and Klein where they talk about the whole presentation is on oil and gas reporting and disclosure in selected countries, and then they talk about why does Alaska need to receive data, and they say it's required in order to properly manage the state's resources. It's required so you can get a full understanding of technical and commercial factors. It's required so that you have the ability to plan and control. And then they talked about other countries and how other countries are vastly ahead of where Alaska is on this issue. And then as Senator Passavant mentioned, it came up in a report back in January. In February, there was another presentation by the administration's consultant, and on February 11, 2011, Gaffney and Klein presented a slide on data transparency where they said, again, this is 3.5 years after we were first alerted to this problem, relative to other regimes, Alaska is handicapped in its decision-making by the small amount of either confidential or reliable public data on energy operations. So as we move forward on this issue of oil taxes and whether or not we should be decreasing them or whether or not there are other levers we need to pull, the issue of data transparency just keeps coming back. I know my office has requested information from you on the data gaps. We requested that 5 weeks ago. You and I had a private meeting in my office. I requested it again at that time. You said you'd get it to me. I still don't have it. The committee has requested it and resources. We still don't have it. You sent us information on what we're getting. You didn't send us information on the data gaps, which is what we're really looking forward. So I guess that would be my ask is it's very difficult for us to go into this debate without knowing where the gaps are. We don't have the staffing or the expertise to know where the gaps are. That's what we're relying on the administration for. So from my perspective, I think it's critical to have that information. I think without having that information, without even knowing where the gaps are, without knowing what data we don't have, it's just very hard for us to make a decision as to whether or not our structure is too high, too low, or just right.
Mr. Chairman, I know we got the information that we have to you yesterday or the day before. If it's not specifically what you want, I would be happy to sit down and grab DNR as well to get you exactly what you want. Because we've been working with DNR and AOGCC, and we've been trying to do is put a grid together that lists all the information that we're receiving and that we think we should be receiving and that we aren't receiving. And it's our intention also to sit down with the industry because they have had comments saying, well, you know, we get this to them. And if we do have a gap and they think they get it to them, they need to tell us in what context it's being, you know, they are getting it to us, whether it's there's a number and it's in that number or what the circumstances are. So I'd certainly be happy to get you specifically what you need.
If you can get us the gap information is what we're really looking for. And, you know, the information that we're already getting, we know. It's the analysis of where the gaps lie and what the commission or what the department thinks is relevant to help us. I'd like to be able to go in and figure out what internal rates of return are, for instance, on various fields that are not being produced. Mm-hmm. And if we were to be able to do an analysis and figure out, okay, the internal rates of returns on various fields are simply inadequate or don't compare to other countries or states, that would be very helpful information for us to have as we go through this tax debate. Net present value. And we actually did this during the ACES debate. We actually had projections on what net present values would be on a margin on fields that were prospective. It'd be tremendously helpful. It was tremendously helpful for us in the last debate. And so I just think having that information you know, clearly the consultant says it's Alaska's handicapped. You know, they've been saying that for 3.5 years now, and I think there's members certainly on this committee and on the Resources Committee who feel the same way. So the more data we have, I think, will just better help us as policymakers make a good decision.
I would agree with you on that, Mr. Chairman, and I'm very happy and eager to work with you and with the legislature on
that. Thank you. And then other questions on that? Okay. Ajia, you've been heavily involved in that in the past. We've got about 6 minutes left. Give us your thoughts on Ajia. Are we still headed in the right direction? Do we need to change course? I know there's been some out there who are not as enthusiastic about it. Give us your perspective on it, please.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I am aware of, when you look at it in 2011, it looks different than it did in 2007 or 2008, whatever year, 2007, I think, in terms of all the shale gas going on. However, there are a lot of issues with shale gas, and those are still being worked out, a lot of them in D.C., with the price of oil continuing to be up at an extremely high level, the discussion about more and more of a shift to natural gas continues. So this is kind of a long-winded way of saying I think we're still on the right course. We haven't yet received the information publicly from TransCanada, or the Alaska Pipeline Project, as well as from the Denali Project on specifically what it is they got in their open seasons. We know they received some bids. We don't know to what degree they are. They're still working on issues. And I'm in a situation similar to you in that the sooner we have the information, the more we're going to know about that. But I think that the possibilities are still out there that this can be a reasonable project moving forward.
Let me ask you this. Just heard recently from some representatives from Mitsubishi that Japan had been planning 9 nuclear plants in the next decade or two. Obviously, with the earthquake there, the nuclear crisis, do you have any opinion about whether or not this changes natural gas? I know there was a recent article in the New York Times which said natural gas is now the queen, they called it, mm-hmm. because of the less companies are likely to use coal, fewer companies, there's a heavy reluctance nuclear. Do you have any sort of insight on that about whether or not natural gas may be a little bit more likely to be used?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think that it probably will. I mean, I know there's been more discussion in this country of the nuclear issue, and this has to give everybody pause. We still don't know how the situation is going to resolve itself in Japan, and hopefully we've seen the worst of it. But it's still kind of up in the air. You know, if I can kind of go off for just a minute, one of the interesting things about working on the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation and meeting with companies in Tulsa and Calgary and Houston and discussing Alaska with companies that either have a limited amount of work in Alaska or no work in Alaska was getting a lot more objective view of how they see Alaska than you see it up here, because, you know, folks are aligned whether they like the bullet line or they support AGIA or they're Denali pipeline people. Most of the time when you have a conversation, it's more than just a very objective opinion. And so the interesting part of it was getting more of an objectivity, but the interesting part of it was I thought there'd be more of a consensus from some of these companies on what they saw. Either looking at AGIA and saying, oh boy, we don't see that happening, or the other way around, but they were all over the board. There were companies that were very bullish on it, saying, we still think that's going to happen. There's going to be a huge conversion to natural gas in this country. What's coming up with shale is going to be enough to handle things for the next 10 years, but looking out, which is where we're looking with AGIA, to 2020 and beyond, we don't have near the capacity that we're going to need in this country. There'd be other companies that would say, well, we see AGIA happening, but it's going to get pushed about 5 years. And we had others that said, and incidentally, these were ones that usually had generous shale interests, that would say, oh, we've got so much shale we don't know what to do with. We're going to be exporting it to other countries. And so, you know, it was kind of interesting to be in these boardrooms And to see that these people are being paid a lot of money to make these multi-million dollar decisions, and yet there didn't seem to be any consensus on what was going to happen in the future.
We've just got a couple minutes left. I just wanted to ask you on other levers that the administration sees or that your department sees that can help us increase production on the North Slope. Have you done any sort of analysis? The roads to resources, for instance, I think is one lever. There's some of us who aren't as convinced about rolling back the production tax, and I think there might be other levers out there. Have you looked at potential other levers that are available to the state to try to encourage the production of more oil into the pipeline?
Mr. Chairman, we have just started recently, and this may have been going on before my couple of months in this job, but since I've been working on it, we have kind of an informal group of commissioners that have been meeting to have these exact same conversations, to not operate in a silo, to make sure that we have DEC and DOT and DNR and the Attorney General and DOR all operating together, all going the same direction on this. So there isn't anything that has come out of those meetings in the couple of months that I've been working on them, but we're optimistic that we're going to be able to do everything we can from a number of different directions instead of just one or two hit and miss. We're also going to be much more aggressive in promoting Alaska. I know over the last couple of years we've gone out to conferences that have a lot of independents and a lot of explorers. DNR and DOR just shared a booth at one in Houston in February that had quite a bit of interest in it, where we basically laid out, you know, the positives about Alaska and to gather interest. And I think over the last couple of years, that's been of benefit, and that's something that we can continue to get more aggressive on. So I agree with you, Mr. Chairman, that there's more that needs to be done, and we're going to work to do everything we can.
Great. Thank you. Other questions by the committee? Okay, it's 10. Yes, Senator Pastor.
If there's time, I mean, I just had one more. With the issue of, you brought up the shale gas revolution in North America, and, you know, that's part of the effect on pricing of natural gas in North America. And obviously Alaska's tax structure is based upon beliefs as to pricing that I believe no longer exist, and all the forecasts that the disparity between the natural gas pricing and the oil pricing is going to continue for maybe 20 years or more into the future. What are your thoughts on Alaska's tax structure, given that the beliefs that were in existence at the time of the coupling of the tax structures no longer appear to be valid?
Through the chair, Senator Passavant, that is certainly something that I am interested in taking a look at. And, you know, I've been very vocal about that. I understand what happened in the previous administration with the previous commissioner, but that's not me. And it was a different time then. It was before the open season. And so that's something we're very open to taking a look at, because, you know, it's amazing how quickly the environment changes. On the negative side, we look at the closing of the GTL plant in Nikiski. You know, when there used to be a connection between oil and gas and they were getting good money in Japan for our LNG, it was very profitable. But now, I mean, we know the situation with Cook Inlet and having less natural gas, but it also resulted, what's going on in the U.S. is having an effect worldwide in what the price of natural gas is. That's on the negative side. On the positive side, with that disconnect, there are things that we've taken a look at over the last few years, such as GTL as an example, that hadn't been economic and had multinationals pouring billions of dollars into studies or potentially development of plants that were backing off on it. Well, it's now a completely different issue, because you're right, it's been disconnected for so long that, and anticipated to be so in the future, that there are opportunities that didn't look very good a year or two ago that now I think we need to put a lot more focus on.
Great. Thank you. We are past 10:30. I know you're busy. Thank you again for coming forward. I would just ask the data and information, if you could get that information to us, work with my office. I know that's a big, big concern for members on this committee and members on the Resources Committee. I would ask that you get that to us as quickly as possible. And then hopefully, once we receive that information, then certainly look to a motion to forward your name on. But with that, we're adjourned.
Thank you.